Today in Movie World, as we talk about Superman and the Naked Gun. It's time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you.
Welcome back from summer.
From being on backs of airplanes.
Yes.
Very much. All of us.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We got quite a lot of air miles this past few weeks.
We did.
Collectively.
Yes.
We summered well.
We did. It's lovely to be together doing this, though.
Yes.
I have missed doing this.
Yeah, no, it is. It's nice to have a catch-up, nice to be hanging out and talking movies. We should talk a little bit about our travels.
Should we?
Should we? Yes.
Well, I'm going to talk about it.
we got to meet up with Yazdi in London, which was delightful.
And I got to meet your family.
You did, yes. And we got to meet yours and... Yeah. It was delightful to see.
We had beers and lovely meal.
We did, and we played some bowling.
And it was Joe's birthday.
It was indeed, and Rashmi's birthday too.
Yes,
correct.
And yours had just passed.
Correct.
So a bunch of birthdays. So yeah, we were off traveling, seeing family in Scotland, in London, and then went to Ghana as well. So
and then Yazdi, you were in London, and you were in
Portugal.
Yes,
Did a week long National Geographic tour of Portugal, which was wonderful.
Yeah.
I'd never been.
So what is that like? 5 countries, 3 continents. Listen to us. We are the jet set.
We are.
Yes.
May it continue.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. We did get a lot of time in the back of airplanes and downloading shows and
yeah, my pick stuff. Today is going to be something, my movie pick will be something I watched on the back of an airplane.
Which I've been bugging you about.
You have. So
let's jump in.
Yeah, what is your picture?
So yes, let's get into a segment of I can't find anything to watch on video on demand. And this is where we talk about what we've been watching or things that we may have seen that are now available on the streaming services. The goal here is to hopefully help you find something, a nugget maybe that you didn't know about, or something that maybe you missed, or something that we've wanted to talk about on the show, because sometimes that happens. We see something at a film festival, but we never really get to explore it. So what is in your respective queues?
Oh, I thought you were going to go first.
All right, I'll go first. Yeah. So I'll go first. So I finally got to watch the movie that both of you loved from last year, the movie Flow.
Which was Oscar nominated and won
for Best Animation. Movie.
It's currently streaming now on Max. So if you are an HBO, hopefully, is it back to HBO yet?
Yes, that is back to HBO.
It should be, so HBO Max. So hopefully if you whatever the streaming service is called these days, but if you have subscription to Max, you can now just pop up the interface and look for the movie Flow, FLOW, and watch one of the most beautiful and meditative and anxiety-ridden animations that you'll ever see. The sheer beauty of this just melted me. What I couldn't get over was there's a lot of safety, there's a lot of precariousness, there's a lot of jeopardy for this little cat in the movie, which is part of its story. I had a little bit of a moment when I was like, oh no, how does she get out of this now?
I mean, 2 things about it. One is, so everybody should watch it. It very deservedly won Best Animated Movie last year, and it wasn't from lack of competition. Inside Out 2, there are so many other great animated movies. What I really like about this movie is that this movie was not made by an army of people that, you know, Disney or Pixar hired. This was done in Latvia by a group of, 50 or 60 animators. And, you know, some parts of it in the theater, you can tell it looks a little video gamey-like, but outside of it, it's just a remarkable feat of achievement. So, you know, we say, oh, you know, nobody can beat Pixar or nobody has the power to, you know, go against DreamWorks. But they literally, if you look at the credits of those animated movies, they go on for 10 minutes because there's literally thousands of people who worked on the animation. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing that a small group of people from a pretty small country in Europe has been able to make this movie. And the other thing also is that I really like that for a story about a cat trying to escape this deluge, which is coming through the forest in which the cat lives, this is not a cute movie. This is not a fable. It's very realistic, right? And it doesn't beat you on the head. You can take away whatever you want from the movie in terms of, you know, any parallels to the real world. But it, so don't expect a cutesy, like a Disney movie with cats dancing and, you know, it's not a musical. It's a pretty serious meditative movie.
Yeah,
it's
wonderful, though. Almost like a public service announcement mm-hmm. in some ways.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I mean, I think the movie is very open to interpretation. Mm-hmm. And what I'll say is part of the reasons it stayed with me is because it doesn't necessarily explain itself in the way that you often get with animated movies, right? You know, there's something happening in this world and we go on this journey, but it doesn't necessarily fill it with exposition in terms of what is happening and why. We're just kind of, we all had our own individual take when we discussed this. You know, I took one thing. I think Yazdi, you had a particular spin mm-hmm. on things. I know Rashmi, you did too. So,
yeah.
And the other, just final thing, there is no dialogue in this movie.
Yes, yes. Zero.
None,
zero.
No talking animals. Nothing is, I mean, you know, they are anthropomorphized to some extent, but you know, this is just, it's like watching a painting. It's a very, very meditative experience. And even though I watched it on the plane, which is usually where things just, you know, drain from my brain immediately I get off the plane, this one has stayed with me in my heart. So my pick is Flow on HBO Max. Stream it today.
Yazdi.
So my pick is a movie which is celebrating its 20th anniversary right now. And it was always one of my blind spots. I remember when this movie came out, it was like a thriller and, you know, I somehow missed to watch it. But it's been on Netflix for a long time and I finally caught up with it. I saw a little article written by Letterboxd saying, you know, these are great movies sitting right now, you know, quick summer movies that you are missing. And it was on it. And the movie is Red Eye. And it stars Rachel McAdams and Cillian Murphy. And Brian Cox from Succession fame,
yeah.
Very young. But I should say the two leads are at the peak of their beauty. I mean, the camera just loves the two of them. And it's a very claustrophobic film about this hotel manager who somehow gets caught in this assassination plan, which is being put in place for one of the rooms at which a dignitary is staying at the hotel she manages. And she's on this red eye flight and this person has to extract information from her in order to enable the assassination.
Oh,
and
wow.
It's a quick, I think the movie's less than 90 minutes. It's 80,
I love that.
It's 81 minutes long. It doesn't try to be anything more than it is. There are no unnecessary explosions. It's very tight. You're always like, what would you do in this particular situation? It's held up really well after 20 years. And I think Rachel McAdams, I've said this many times before, when she smiles, it's like the whole camera,
the whole
screen just lights up. And, you know, and I did not realize Cillian Murphy has these piercing eyes.
Yes.
I don't know how they photographed him, but the first time he comes on the screen, I'm like, oh my God.
Yes.
Like, I felt like he penetrated my soul.
You haven't watched
Peaky Blinders, and maybe it was the lighting or whatever, but it's a really fun little caper. You know, it's kind of a very well-made B movie.
Is it a thriller?
It is
absolutely a thriller.
Yeah. It's a great film, Red Eye. It's based on a red eye she takes from somewhere to Miami. Yeah.
Okay. It's on my list, actually. Okay. And mine is, okay. So when this came out, after the last Wes Anderson movie came out, we spit and snarled and hissed. And
I think it was the very first zero I've ever given on
Correct.
Movie Wallet.
Oh. It was awful.
I hated Asteroid City.
I hated it too.
So none of us were even mildly interested in seeing what the Phoenician scheme would be like.
Especially because the write-ups early on for the Phoenician scheme said it was perhaps among the most Wes Anderson movies ever, which to me was just like a red flag. I'm like, not going to do this.
Yeah.
I won't even watch it for free.
Yeah. But in the end, we gave in, and Joe and I actually gave this an opportunity. And Joe said to me, if it's not good within in the first 10 minutes, I'm going to get up and leave. And I was like, that's fine. But I wanted to watch it. And I'm actually glad I did. It's not the best Wes Anderson movie, but it's certainly not as terrible or as unbearable as Asteroid City. It's got a good story to it. It's kind of twee. Of course, it's Wes Anderson. It's got all the colorfulness and the schemes that he has. But it's actually quite a delightful little caper. So my recommendation is The Phoenician Scheme, which is showing on Peacock.
And I couldn't get through this, so I'll just temper it with...
How long did you stay?
15, 20 minutes.
Longer than I thought you would.
Yeah, no, look, I mean, I was tired that day and I didn't want to work as hard as the movie required me to work to stay with it.
Yeah.
Because as with everything with Wes Anderson, it's very particular. It's very fussy.
Yeah.
You have to pay attention to the details because...
They'll show up.
There's
again.
A lot of distraction around the plot.
Yeah.
And it's got its particular brand of humor, which is not on my wavelength. So I can't say I wholeheartedly recommended it, but that's because as a director, he's not my cup of tea.
Yeah. So for me, this was a little bit of redemption, not full redemption. This is no way as good as the hotel one, which is
Grand Budapest. Oh, yeah, no, even I like that one. I mean, that was
or like Moonrise
wonderful.
Kingdom yep. or any of that stuff.
But Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Yeah, this is not as witty, but you know what? It's not bad. It's got a huge cast, as you can imagine.
Everyone is in his movies.
You know? Yeah. I would want to be in a Wes Anderson movie. Are you kidding?
I would rather have a migraine tablet.
But like Tom Hanks, arguably one of our better actors. I mean, he has been in his last two movies like for like 3 minute part.
Yeah,
like why?
I mean, look, all of these people, many of these people are only in it for less than 15 minutes. Yeah. But the interesting thing here is we have Mia Throppleton, mm-hmm. who is Kate Winslet's daughter, is in this movie. So bit of nepotism, sure.
Work it. All right, so let's recap. My recommendation was Flow, available now on HBO Max. Rashmi?
Mine was Red Eye on Netflix.
And mine is The Phoenician Scheme on Peacock.
Cool. Three different services.
Yeah, I love it. That's why I was also thinking it would be, yeah.
Yeah. Okie doke. Two movie reviews to cover today. It feels like we could have had exactly the same sequence of movies in the 1980s, right? We could have said,
We're
reviewing Superman and The Naked Gun.
Yes.
This is true.
This is absolutely true.
So it's kind of a kickback. Like, are we
pre-sold
franchise bankrupt? Are we revisiting
yes.
these things?
Yes.
Yes.
All right. So let's tackle them in the order I stated. Superman and The Naked Gun. Let's start with Superman.
So Superman is ostensibly one of the earliest comic book heroes. Is there another comic book superhero who is more talked, discussed, known, loved, idealized in the world than Superman? And certainly as far as the movies go and television, they have done their share with, you know, endless iterations of Superman.
Endless.
And, in 1978, there was the Richard Donner version, which I think was the most seminal, which had Christopher Reeve and Margot Kidder in the lead roles. And then there have been so many iterations, but the most recent one was the one with Henry Cavill, Man of Steel.
Zack Snyder's interpretation.
And so there's been a lot of changes in the DC universe, especially the filmmaking part. And I believe James Gunn, who directed the Guardians of the Galaxy movies, amongst others, has taken a fairly high role in the studio. And he took on the task of kind of yet another iteration of Spider-Man, and that's the one which has come out in 2023. It stars David Corenswet in the lead role. David Corenswet was in Twisters and a few other movies in little side roles, but this is his first time as the lead. Rachel Brosnahan takes over the Lois Lane character. Nicholas Hoult is here playing Lex Luthor. And the writing credits are James Gunn and then Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster, who were the original comic book writers from 1938, I believe. The one line assessment of this Superman is that Superman must reconcile his alien Kryptoninian heritage with his human upbringing as reporter Clark Kent. As the embodiment of truth, justice, and the human way, he soon finds himself in a world that views these as old-fashioned. That is horribly vague, but, you know, the movie came out about a month ago. It's been doing pretty well. It's had its share of controversies. What do you guys think about Superman 2025?
Why?
Okay.
Look, I would say that the casting of this is fantastic. I love Nicholas Holt. I think... this version of Superman in terms of the casting is really, really good. I really like that, but it didn't add anything new to the genre, and I actually fell asleep in the middle of it. And I think that it felt more like a like the mutant movie, the X-Men. You know, that there are all these demigods who have come to Earth, and are they, is that a good thing or a bad thing? I think that's really like as if someone stole an X-Men script and kind of turned it into Superman. So, again, I really, really, really like the casting, and I like the feel of it in terms of, I like it more than the Zack Snyder version, but it doesn't add anything new. And I didn't understand why we've got a Lois Lane Superman love story going on when we've already seen that in Lois and Clark, the TV years. So, meh.
Look, I mean, this is very polished. It's a very hardworking movie. James Gunn, I think, brought his kind of signature sensibility to this and tried to bring some warmth back. I was a fan of the Zack Snyder interpretation.
Yeah, you really liked him, I remember.
You know, because I just liked this... that particular vision of it. It was, you know, it was a dark night flavored Superman.
Yeah, it was.
You know, wrestling with his, it was an existential crisis of being. So this has brought back some of the warmth to the series. It's very polished. It looks fantastic. But ultimately, you know, if you're going to move away from the Zack Snyder interpretation, then... we've got to stop all this crash bangy stuff.
Yeah.
I'm getting exhausted. I mean, you know, all of this kind of like wallop, bang. I mean, it's, you know, we saw it in IMAX theater. And my ears were bleeding with all of the like thumping around of like stuff moving at the speed of light and crashing, you know, into the earth. And, you know, it's quite... there's quite a lot of action in this movie, and it's fatiguing. So, look, it's very well done, and there's a charm to it that Gunn brings with his vision and his direction and his pen. But it ultimately just failed to connect with me. And yeah, I love the crypto dog.
Yeah, the dog was the best part.
It's like the best thing about the movie. But overall, I just found it very hard to like this take. And yeah, to Rashmi's question, why? What did it bring?
But Yazdi.
I really, really love this movie. I think it's the
interesting.
It was the movie of the summer for me. I just felt really? Like a real summer movie.
Wow.
I'm at the other end of the I'm not a, you know, a comic book expert. I'm not like a, you know, superhero fanboy, whatever. Mm-hmm. My recognition and my earthing of Superman comes from, you know, the comic books and the Saturday morning cartoons I watched, which were overly idealistic and where Superman was always the right person and he was almost moralizing and he was the Boy Scout. And I think the original, the 1978 Richard Donner version had this kind of same feeling of, you know, yeah, Superman for sure. As being... kind of almost cut off from reality, like, you know, like he just is a do-gooder, like a good, you know, goody two-shoes. And I see a kind of a return to that because I was exhausted of Man of Steel and all of that, because it's the Nolanization of the superhero realm. And it was great, you know, with the Batman series with Nolan, but then, you know, Zack Snyder has been just digging deeper and deeper. And I think he made 3 movies. And in the third one, I guess it's been long enough now, but Superman actually dies. And I'm like, really? Batman versus Superman.
I didn't care for the sequels, actually. I agree with that.
So for me, it was a really welcome comeback to a simpler time. It reminded me of like earlier kind of simpler, more innocent times. So I liked that about the movie. The other thing I really liked about the movie is that it's very, very political. I think it's not an accident that many of the things which are happening in the movie are a commentary on what's happening right now. And so I kind of like that, you know, like, Alex Garland made this movie, what did he make the movie? Warfare. Civil War,
yeah.
Where he was too afraid to take sides. And so it became kind of an unrealistic imagination of what might happen. This one, he's clearly taking sides politically in terms of where things are. And so I kind of appreciated that. And I really liked, there were a couple pieces of dialogue. And again, I see the world probably more through rose-colored glasses, but there's a part where, you know, he and Lois Lane are having a conversation and she gets annoyed and she says, you find everything beautiful and it's kind of stupid. And he says, maybe that's the real punk rock. And that's been quoted again and again by people. So I kind of like that this movie goes back to good ethics, to kindness. You know, it sounds stupid to be saying and corny to be saying this, but it's saying maybe that's what we need to return to right now in the world. So I kind of appreciated it, you know, more so from that kind of, you know, a political angle. And also I think who is a bigger immigrant than Superman? I mean, he's come from another planet, right? To planet Earth. He doesn't belong here. So there's a lot of parallels to what's going on. So I really like that. I like that. I fully agree. It does look like a lot like
X-Men.
Yeah. Because there's that whole part with Nathan Fillion and other ones. James Gunn has said that the dog is supposed to be a stand-in for his own dog.
Oh, okay.
And it's completely a CGI-made dog, which is good for them because I couldn't tell when I was watching it. And it's supposed to be a composite of his dog who is just cannot be tamed and he's crazy and he just kind of goes out and does his own thing. So I kind of, anyway, all of those pieces kind of really work for me.
Yeah, I'm with Joe. It didn't connect with me emotionally. And so I think it may have been jet lag. I can't blame the movie for my jet lag because we just got back. And I think it was ambitious to go and watch an evening show. But nonetheless, I think a movie has a responsibility to keep you engaged. And again, I wish it had brought something a little novel. And then, I'm shocked that the crash, bang, wallop, fighting, like all the buildings, that was very Michael Bay. Like it felt very Michael Bay to me.
I actually thought it was very, very talky. So the movie in the first part is very, very talky.
Very talky, yeah.
So for that, which works just great for me. But I agree in its last act, it's the same, you know, destruction.
Yeah,
it's
just like,
I agree.
I just think it's these pre-sold franchises, these reboots. I wish they would bring something different. And it's so loaded, right? You call something Superman and it's fully loaded. I mean, it's been well received.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a great, I'm looking at the tomato meter and the score is very good. I think it's like a 88. Where is it running? It's running 83% for critics and 90% for audiences. So I'm definitely in the minority, but I couldn't connect with this movie.
And it's made a ton of money.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which actually I think bodes well because, you know, Marvel has been leading the pack in terms of movie interpretations and DC was like in its last breath. And I think this is, you know, put some life back in from the DC end of things. And, you know, Gunn is planning to do many, many additional.
God help us.
You know, this is meant to kick off a new chapter in DC. And so, I did like, there were little touches which were kind of, unique and kind of clever. And James Gunn has this kind of mischievous sensibility that you see in all of his movies.
Yeah.
Like his rendering of external trolls is actually, you know, these monkeys typing things out, right? Which is obviously a stand-in for,
yeah,
you know, people on social media who are just crazily, you know, fighting. And I'm one of those, but anyway, yeah.
Yeah. No, I was going to say, you know, we loved, all three of us loved Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 that he did. We were in love with that movie.
That's the comment I was going to make here. I mean, I think Guardians 3 had an emotional core to it that really affected me.
Same.
And I was hopeful that Gunn would bring that same sensibility here. He's tried it again. I think he's restored some of the warmth to the franchise. And frankly, you know, I like the direction he's taking it, you know, just this particular iteration needed to be amped up a little bit to kind of worm its way into my heart.
I mean, I thought Rachel Brosnahan was a fantastic Lois Lane.
It's an inspired bit of casting. And I love
Nicholas Holt, again, was a fantastic Lex Luthor compared to Jesse Eisenberg, who we saw in that last, you know, it was a much more gritty, I love the performances, but again, I wish the screenplay had delivered more.
Yeah, I'm all for Rachel Brosnahan to have like a lead role in a big action movie. I mean, if more people get to know her this way, that's great.
Yeah.
And I agree. I mean,
and for those who don't know, she's in that wonderful series called The Wonderful
Mrs. Maisel.
The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
Yeah. I also like that, you know, there have been so many iterations of Lex Luthor, including on television.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so for Nicholas Holt, I mean, often Lex Luthor tends to be bald. This is not a bald version of Lex Luthor, but Nicolas Cage brings... Nicholas Holt brings such a good sense of... You almost understand where he's coming from. And yet at the same time, he's so ruthless. So I really liked it. I should also add before
he is bald in this one, Yazdi.
Is he?
Yes.
Yeah, you didn't see past his baldness.
Okay.
He's bald.
Okay. He's very, very bald. Okay. Yeah.
But he looks good bald, to be honest.
Yeah. Clementina joined for the film's
guest screening, reviewer.
And as always, she has sent in her review. So I'm gonna read that. So she says, I love this movie. The film was more lighthearted than the other DC movies in the past. There was a lot of humor incorporated, like as in Marvel and previous James Gunn movies. They had many characters that had never been shown in live action before, and I hope they'd show up in more films in the future. If she were to change something, it would be the acknowledgement of Supergirl in the movie, just because she really liked the Easter egg about her being there at the end. I think you do see her in the end credits.
We do, yeah.
And she says it would have been better if, you know, they had her flying and doing a little bit more. Okay. The film is definitely worth seeing again, and it is really fun watch, even if you're new to DC or an expert, or if you like superhero movies in general. So,
thank you, Clementina, for that take.
Yes. Okay, let's wind this one up. So, Yazdi, why don't you go first?
Like I said, and there's one other thing I wanted to mention, but okay, my score is 8.5 out of 10, which I'm going to back down to 9. For me, it's just a good...
Oh, back up to 9, you mean?
Did I say 9? To an 8.
Okay.
Okay, am I having a stroke?
Okay,
it's an 8.5, which I'm going to back down to an 8. I really like that it's kind of fun. It's very, maybe it's the corny part of me, but I love that it's so committed to kindness and goodness and you know, finding that in the current world. And maybe that's what resonated for me. I think that's who Superman is fundamentally. He's just a person who wants to do good. So that kind of, I think that message had been lost through all the, you know, all the gravitas and the despair of the previous movie. So I really like that. I should also mention that another movie that which we didn't go for a screening for, but which also came out in the same time frame was, you know, again, the Hollywood's endless iteration of the Fantastic Four. Mm. And I've seen 3 different versions of Fantastic Four before. And I'm like, no more. I'm done with this. I never liked the Fantastic Four. I don't want to watch it. But then one evening I had nothing to do, and that was the only one that was playing, and I rolled my eyes and I said, okay, let me just go and just poop on this movie and confirm my feeling that, you know, there's no need for it. And that movie, really won me over, much against my expectations. And that movie set in a kind of super stylish 60s that never actually existed even at that time, but it's so, the production design is so gorgeous. It's like the kind of 60s that I want to live in. And it has some pretty weighty issues that it's handling. And the one thing I should say, both this movie and both Superman as well as Fantastic Four does is they just do away with the origin story. So they're not repeating.
Yeah.
This Superman, it doesn't go into, you know, Kal-El and his parents and, you know, how he
Krypton
was pushed out of Krypton.
And
it just plunks you in. The movie just, Superman just starts with, you know, something going on, you know, at the Daily Planet or whatever it was. The same thing with Fantastic Four. It doesn't bother to tell you how they got there, what's going on. It just starts with, you know, they're already famous superheroes by the time the movie starts. And I kind of like that because I think a lot of the superhero movies, at least the initial one, just gets bogged down in an origin story that we have seen before. So I you know, much against my wishes, and to the great detriment of severe overexposure by Pedro Pascal, I really liked Fantastic Four as well. And it's got Vanessa Kirby in it, who I've always liked. So I see a lot of similarity in between the two movies because they're both great to look at, full of colors, and both very hopeful.
So, Joe, your score for Superman?
Ultimately, I was disappointed. Look, I mean, I think this is partly because this was one of my most anticipated movies of the summer. And so to go in and find myself less than blown away, you know, makes me put my kind of harshest critic hat on and want to pick apart why.
Yeah.
Look, again, as I said earlier, I think I welcome the viewpoint that they're bringing back to the character and all the things you say, Yazdi, I think is exactly on point. The hopefulness of the character, it's very different to the Snyder take. It's a nice reset for the DC universe. And James Gunn, I think, is probably the one to do it. So, you know, bravo for all of those decisions. The movie ultimately didn't work for me. I didn't hate it, but I'm going to struggle to give it above a 6 out of 10. So that's where my score is.
And mine is what Joe said, but I was even more disappointed. So mine is going to be a 4.
Oh, ouch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, right.
I should say not super. Not super.
Yeah. Look, I mean, we all have different takes. So, yeah, that's what Movie Wallace is about.
Yes.
But, you know, fisticuffs and punch ups because we never agree.
Yeah.
Okay. Moving on then, movie number 2 is The Naked Gun.
Which I really wanted to watch. I'm probably one of those rare people who has never seen The Naked Gun movies of past, and everyone keeps
with Leslie Nielsen.
Absolutely brilliant. And so it's kind of fun to see.
And I have to say, I really don't want to watch this at all.
Because really?
Because this is a style of humor that I think
you don't love
has fallen out of favor, and it fell out of favor because it was done beyond exhaustion.
Yeah,
and don't get me wrong, The Naked Gun and its
sequels. There's a whole series of movies in the '80s.
Super, yeah, it started, I guess, with Airplane, maybe, and those types of things. But I haven't seen one for a long time because when I see them, they feel very
forced.
It's just a very dated way of doing comedy.
Yeah,
this kind of slapstick thing. So. I'm terrified to go near this movie.
But I am excited to see Liam Neeson. Sorry, Liam Neeson in a funny role because I think he's actually a very funny man. So this is the 2025 version, and the description says only one man has the particular set of skills to lead police squad and save the world. Excuse me. And much has been made of the fact that this stars Liam Neeson and Pamela Anderson. Some say they are together now and dating. Directed by Akiva Schaffer. It stars Liam Neeson, Pamela Anderson, Paul Walter Hauser, CCH Pounder, and a whole host of others. And Yazdi, you are the only one of us that saw this. Is this worth a watch?
Yeah, I think if you've never watched an airplane movie or a previous Naked Gun, it may be a bit of a whiplash for you, and you would be like, this is just ridiculous. This is stupid.
And is it politically incorrect now? Is it got that same sort of...
Yeah, there's lots of, you know, ill-regarded or ill-conceived jokes on race and, you know, on police brutality and all kinds of stuff. But I think there's a certain kind of comedy where you just get the sick kitchen sink, right? They're just throwing things, like the jokes in Naked Gun are coming so fast, like right from the first minute, they're coming so fast that even if you roll your eyes or if you don't laugh at one, there will be, you know, seven other ones that you're going to laugh at. I'm a curmudgeon when I watch movies. I almost never, ever, like even in like the American Pie movies, I never laugh. And I was laughing on this one, like 10 minutes into it, because it was so absurd and it was so stupid and dumb. But yet it was, you know, those jokes had some, you know, they had some backbone to them, right? Like there's a great, you know, there's a great line where Pamela Anderson comes in for examination at the police station and he says, take a seat. Or take a chair.
And she literally lifts it up.
And she says, no, I have many chairs at home, right? Or something like that. And then that gag keeps going on and on. So that's the other. The two things I really liked is that this movie is committed to the, you know, 10 jokes a minute density. They're coming at you fast and furious. And it's not ashamed of doing that. It doesn't say, oh, maybe we've gone too far. It doesn't say, oh, at this point, we need to get serious. It just commits to it the whole the way. There's a whole bit in the third part of the movie about a snowman. And it's almost like a short film within that movie. And it's so weird and it's so odd. It's not terribly funny, but it keeps going on and on and on. And after a while, I was kind of smiling. I'm like, they are taking this idea and they're sticking with it and they're seeing it through. So I really appreciated that. I think I kind of miss those movies from the 80s, which were so slapstick and silly. And so I really liked it. You know, what's his name? Liam Neeson is just fine. Although if you add, the math doesn't work. If he's supposed to be the son of the Leslie Nielsen character, and the movie starts with Leslie Nielsen having died, and so he's looking up to his dad. But, you know, I think Liam Neeson is too old to be his son and still be in the current time. But it doesn't matter. I'm just being nitpicky. Pamela Anderson, you know, is so game in this movie. And she's just, you know, she you know, for the silliest comic gags, she's there and she's like beat by beat with him. And, you know, Pamela Anderson has kind of had a reimagining of her identity of sorts, you know, of late. And then she was in The Greatest Showgirl or The Last Showgirl.
Which was fantastic.
Yeah. So, you know, it's really good to see her kind of in this new version of herself. She's having a great time.
Is she reprising the Priscilla Presley character from the original? Is that the same role she plays?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I really enjoyed it. I was laughing. When I was not laughing, I was just waiting for the next joke to come along. There's some really, really good one-liners. I kind of miss those movies from the 80s and 90s, which were just dumb as all get out. So yeah, I really liked it. Okay. I really, really. I just came out with a smile on my face. It's the kind of movie where, you know, you're familiar with the MacGuffin, right? In all movies or in spy thrillers, there is some object that everybody's after, which is going to destroy the world, right?
It's a bag with
something. In Pulp Fiction, it is something in a bag that you just see in the briefcase that you just see the light. In this movie, that MacGuffin is actually called plot device. So the name on the thing that everybody's after is called plot device. So it's really very, very self-aware and it's kind of playing with that.
Okay.
Yeah. So I would give it a 7.5 out of 10. And just because I've missed these movies so much and we've become so politically correct and we've kind of you know, been kind of a little hesitant about comedy of late, I think. And for a movie which just goes all, you know, bang out, absurd. Like, there's some things which are just completely absurd. I really like. So I'm going to bump it up to an 8. There is nobody I wouldn't recommend it to. There is nothing remotely like sexual or offensive about the movie. I think everybody can go watch it and have a good time.
And I love that they've edited it down to 1 hour, 25 minutes.
This is another movie less than 90 minutes. Like, maybe, our screening ended like at 8:15 or 8:20. And I'm like, and we started at 7:00 and I was like, yes.
Get in, get out. Do get what you're in, supposed to do. Yeah. No. Yeah. I'm glad. I'm actually intrigued to watch it now. And I've also seen the review. The reception has been pretty good here. Yeah. So, you know, I just don't think this type of humor would work. But I guess what is funny is funny. And maybe the jokes from the Airplane era I watched, I caught bits of Airplane from time to time. And, you know, there's a political correctness that is completely absent from that era, which is fine. I mean, the humor is humor, and I don't think humor necessarily needs to be politically correct. But, you know, they did feel like movies of their time. So to see this revised and updated for a modern audience, and in a way that works, is exciting to me. I think we should go see this, Rashmi.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we've got a long to-do list, Joe. We were away for a long time, and now we have a lot to catch up with. Awesome. Including Fantastic Four, which Yazdi mentioned. So, yeah. Did you give this a score? Sorry.
Yeah, 8 out of 10.
8 out of 10. Wow. As well.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Gosh. I mean, if you are the kind of person who likes, you know, Oscar Wilde, and you like very subtle, dry humor.
What about if you love Chris Nolan?
Stop picking on me.
No, I'm trying to get a sense of will Joe like this?
Because I think Joe will like it. I think Joe will like it because the gags they're coming so fast all the time, okay. And they don't.
Okay,
relent.
They don't. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
The question is it better than Megan 2.0?
Oh, don't yes, start. Is. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Yay, we made it to the end of the podcast.
Yes, indeed. Thank you for sticking with us. Thank you once again for listening. Thank you to our guest reviewer, Clementina, for her thoughts on Superman. Thank you to both of you for being co-moviewallers. Thank you for listeners for listening to us. I'm full of gratitude today. Aww. On that note, I'm thankful that this podcast has come to an end. We'll be back soon with reviews of Ne-Zha 2 and Highest to Lowest, the new Spike Lee movie. Until then, too many movies, too little time. A goodbye from me.
And me.
And me as well.